This is episode 296 of Tech Talk Radio, Australia's premier tech talk show, which aired on Monday, September 6, 2010.
You're listening to Tech Talk Radio, in your backyard, and worldwide on the pod.
I don't think anyone should think this is a license to continue to breach copyright. iiNet is not responsible for stopping it.
There's no real demand for censorship of the internet in Australia. There's no other country in the Western world, at least, that's trying anything like this.
Netflix aren't better at anything, but we think we've got something, and we call it the iPad.
And today, we're delighted to be present at the creation of digital radio in Australia.
Senator Conroy is completely botching the implementation of this filtering policy of his.
For adults who want to be able to watch the other material, we're not proposing to do that.
On air, on the internet, and on the pod, you're listening to Tech Talk Radio.
Hello everybody, I'm Andrew McCollum, and welcome to the 296th edition of Tech Talk Radio. Whoever said a week was a long time in politics had no idea the same philosophy applied to technology. Since the last Tech Talk Radio aired, Apple have revamped some of their flagship products, including a new line of iPods, Apple TV, and launched a new music-oriented social network called Ping. In the same week, Samsung released what it believes will be an iPad killer with their new Galaxy tablet, something that for all intents and purposes looks and feels like an iPad and even uses the same peripherals as an iPad. Something which will no doubt have the Cupertino legal fraternity enrolling their neighbours' kids at elite colleges in California. Apple also touted two upcoming revisions to its iOS mobile operating system. These updates offer a fairly detailed picture of Apple's short-term mobile strategy, extending its strength in features such as multitasking and multi-touch to devices beyond the iPhone. Apple TV and Ping also hint at Apple's interest in both cloud-based services and social connectivity. Also, these advances place Apple in fiercer competition against Google, which is developing Google TV. Microsoft, which plans on launching its own consumer-orientated mobile platform Windows Phone 7, and Facebook, which might take issue with Apple starting a social network, music-centric or not. Ping, Apple's latest offering in iTunes, is a social network for music. Using terms and processes which Twitter users will be more than familiar with, Apple's Ping lets you follow your favourite musos or bands. Yes, that's right, you can now follow Lady Gaga and keep up to date with her every move. Just what listeners of Tech Talk Radio would want, right? Ping is built into the iTunes app on iPhone and iPod Touch, so you can see your artist's updates from anywhere. The new iPod has many new features and has been made very much like the new iPhone 4. These new features will allow gaming like never before, video calls, improved speed and power, and a breathtaking new display. FaceTime is an application for the Touch and iPhone that makes video calls possible on both iGadgets. This is probably the most awaited feature on the new iPod Touch, as it allows you to make video calls over Wi-Fi. It also has two cameras, one on the front so you can talk face-to-face with someone, and one on the back so they can see exactly what you're looking at. The new iPod Touch now supports high-definition video recording. Well, 720p anyway. It also lets you edit them too. The iPod comes with basic editing software, and you can buy the iMovie app for only $4.99 in the Apple App Store. You can also take point-and-shoot pictures with your new iPod Touch. So it seems the new iGadgets are coming of age, with new gaming features, a faster processor, and even folders to stick your stuff in. All Apple has to do now is think outside the square.
This week on Tech Talk Radio,
there's a new range of iGadgets, iPad clones and mobile devices set to tantalise you this Christmas. But Adam Turner warns of one you may just want to think twice about. Jeff Alexander from Microsoft Australia joins the panel to talk Windows 7 and Home Server. We're now in our second week of NBN limbo, so is the formation of a minority government any closer to reality? And Samsung launched the Galaxy tablet. First up, though, here's Dr. Ron with the latest from the Tech Talk News Desk.
This is Tech Talk News.
This week on Tech Talk News, Apple's iTunes 10 with Ping and the new Apple TV. The ACMA puts an end to 3D television trials for now. Microsoft says Windows Phone 7 will be ready in time to ship for Christmas. Criminal charges against WikiLeaks founder Julian Assange are dropped by Swedish authorities. And the Westpac Bank blames a software glitch for a day of downtime. Welcome to Tech Talk News. In a big week for Apple enthusiasts, a number of major product releases were announced at a keynote speech by Steve Jobs on Wednesday last week. A new version of iTunes, a new social network for lovers of iPods, and an upgrade to the Apple TV Media Center. The new iTunes 10 introduces Apple Ping, a Facebook-like social network intended to help users discover music by seeing what their friends are buying for their iPods. Ping has profiles, friends, news feeds and comments, and you can easily preview or buy songs in your friends' news feeds. And in an unashamed bid for dominance in the digital lounge room, the Apple TV has been redesigned to be smaller in size but big on entertainment. According to Apple's website, the updated media center lets users rent titles from the largest selection of HD movies, many available the same day they come out on DVD. Apple says you can now watch Netflix titles instantly, rent TV shows commercial-free, and stream photos and music from your computer to your widescreen television. Apple also announced the release of a new iPod Touch music player, supporting FaceTime video calling and supposed high-def video recording, as well as a new iPod Nano with a multi-touch interface. Trials of 3D television in Australia will be suspended after the upcoming broadcasts of the AFL and NFL Grand Finals. The Australian Communications and Media Authority has put a stop to any more trials before it reviews the first test broadcasts earlier this year and considers issues such as licensing and consumer policy. The ACMA said last week that it would issue scientific apparatus licenses to Channel 7 and the Nine Network for 3D broadcasts of the AFL and NRL Grand Finals, but added that it would not consider future requests while it conducts a review of the technology. The ACMA is understood to be reviewing feedback from trials to date concerning reception, interference, technical issues, and consumer feedback. Copies of these trials are available for download from the ACMA website. Microsoft has put the finishing touches on Windows Phone 7, so handsets will be on sale in time for the Christmas shopping season, and has also started shipping the software to handset manufacturers and phone networks. Windows Phone 7 is the successor of the popular Windows Mobile 6.5 operating system, and has a completely new interface to previous incarnations of the platform. IT Wire reported last week that various changes have been made to Windows Phone 7 since the technical preview was released. Windows Phone 7 was criticized by early reviewers for inelegant integration of contacts across its social address book, which saw the usual lists of telephone numbers becoming cluttered and polluted with Facebook updates. The UK Telegraph said last week that since moving on from technical preview status, a new filtering system had been implemented by Microsoft across the Windows Phone 7 platform that addressed this issue. In a bizarre turn of events for the founder of whistleblower website WikiLeaks, Mr. Julian Assange, who was charged with rape by prosecutors in Sweden, has had the charges withdrawn. Earlier this month, Mr. Assange from Melbourne was facing charges of rape and molestation after a recent trip to Stockholm in Sweden. The accusations of molestation are still outstanding, but Mr. Assange says that the allegations against him are a Pentagon-initiated smear campaign after WikiLeaks recently released nearly 77,000 classified US military documents which related to the war in Afghanistan. After a warrant for Mr. Assange's arrest was issued by Swedish authorities and the matter received a significant amount of media attention, a chief prosecutor withdrew the charges the next day after new information reportedly came to light. But a number of police statements obtained by British newspaper The Daily Mail appear to discount Mr. Assange's claims of a Pentagon smear campaign. These statements chronicle Mr. Assange's recent visit to Sweden, wherein he's alleged to have had unwelcome sexual relations with two women. Newsweek reported that there was internal concern at WikiLeaks with the way Mr. Assange had handled the scandal, and that people affiliated with WikiLeaks were currently exploring options to persuade him to step down. And Westpac Bank customers were left angry and frustrated on Tuesday last week after a software glitch left them without internet access to their accounts For most of the day, a Westpac spokesman, Mr. David Lording, blamed the outage on service degradation and a software patch. Mr. Lording added that the downtime was not security-related and apologised to affected customers. On Monday last week, the Commonwealth Bank was faced with an even larger outage, which affected FPOS machines and ATMs. A spokesperson for the Commonwealth said that their outage was caused by a critical security change and that full service had been restored by 5 o'clock on Monday afternoon. I'm Dr. Ron, and that's your tech update for this week.
Previously on Tech Talk Radio.
Let's talk a little bit about what happened during the course of the week.
Thank you very much. Thank you for having me. It's great to be back.
Doncaster yes. Shopping Town up the road.
Julia.
If your SIM card is a Telstra SIM card, then you'll probably want the Telstra one.
Does Australia have a government yet.com?
Don't talk about meter maids, then Microsoft are going to be upset.
So no more pub runs.
No more pub runs.
There's also a rumour that Apple are going to buy a telco or build a telco as well.
But it's still a struggle to get it onto your television.
Dr. Ron, listening to the stream.
Furious.
Correct.
Because there's a limbo state at the fourth time down, yeah. Whatever it is.
I don't like spam.
And I had one of those. It was brilliant until the power supply went up.
I suppose I may as well just throw that one out.
Oh,
useless now.
No good now.
Gee, we've started a ruckus in
Settle.
Mentioned the word Optus. I think you're throwing petrol over them.
Entertaining, informative and independent. You're listening to Tech Talk Radio. The panel on Tech Talk Radio.
Good evening, everybody. Welcome to Tech Talk Radio, live on the radio if you're listening to us in Melbourne on 94.1 3WBC and
across Australia.
Yes.
On various radio
good
stations.
Good radio stations. Just check them out on the web. You'll find them all, but, you know.
It's live for us anyway.
It is. It's live for all the people in our chat room as well. Good evening, chat roomians. What's the collective noun for people in a chat room?
In our chat room, I would dread
to think. It's worth a worth pondering, I think, at some stage. I'm sure they'll
inform us by the end of the night.
I will. You can tell how delayed the stream is between what's in the chat room and things like that. But anyway, hey, what a slow week it's been. Good to see some of the Tech Talk Radio people have been making their own news and getting into the news, which has been fantastic, and we'll talk about that later. And, it's really been dominated by Apple's latest offerings, which Mr. Jobs came out in his keynote and mentioned during the course of the week, and JD's going to tell us he's got his wish list already. Adam's got one he doesn't want, and we're going to talk about that in the couch this week.
Oh, good. So we've got a couch.
We had a couch, and we've also got Jeff Alexander going to talk to us this evening. Now, he's a IT pro evangelist, according to his head sheet. Came through today. And we're going to be talking to him about Home Server and Windows 7 and the new gamey thing. Connect?
Gamey thing.
The gamey thing. It keeps changing its name.
Is this the new Microsoft invention where you don't need a thing to hang on to?
That's right. That's why I'm having problems coming to terms with its name, a thing.
So you're playing against someone and you actually physically punch them in the head and they feel pain.
Yeah, you could. If you've seen some of the stuff on YouTube, it looks a bit strange. But anyway, people jumping all around the place.
It looks very clever, though.
Can you do that without any mechanical assistance?
Yeah, you can, but Microsoft have got a special product to wrap around it as well.
I see.
Yes. Or have they?
We'll find out. We'll speak to Jeff a bit later in the program. We'll find out.
Absolutely.
I want to talk to him about media centres, too. I had a lot of success during the week with my media centre. Graham, thank you very much for your help, too, by the way, your assistance during the week.
Oh, no problem at all.
It took us, between the two of us, about an hour and a half to work out how to change the screen resolution, but we got there in the end, didn't we?
It was very exciting.
This is my argument with some of these things. Like, you like the idea of having a PC in the living room as a media centre, but seriously, if it took you guys that long to change the screen resolution, what's it going to do for the average?
Nah.
In fairness to Microsoft Media Centre,
it was not a
television problem.
The TV was deficient in this particular example.
No, it was.
So
1366,
a modern set would not have had this problem at all.
1366 by 768 was the aspect ratio, which was native to the television.
1366 to what?
Yeah. Is it 14 to 9? I haven't done the ratio. It's something like that.
Something foreign. I'm not familiar with those numbers. Try 1920 by 1080.
That didn't help us at all.
No, that was my first guess, but apparently it's not a full HD TV.
Haven't you got an HD telly?
Well, it's a 768 line, so...
It must be, yeah.
Time to upgrade, Dr. Ron.
I know that's come as a rude shock.
It has an HD tuner in it, but that's different to...
1366.
...by 768. No, hang on, I'll write it down.
So it's not a full HD screen. But that's a lot of people have, when you go and buy televisions, you've got to be aware of this. Some of the smaller screens are not true HD. Well, not that that's a problem, but it's just something you should be aware of.
And that is square pixel 16 to 9. Yeah.
Okay.
When you calculate it all out.
All right. There you go.
Keep a look on True HD, I think they call it, or buy one of the bigger screens, and chances are you'll find that'll be...
Well, this is a 37-inch LG model. It's a fairly old model now. It's probably one of the first ones that came out with an inbuilt HD tuner, and that's why I was hanging out at the time to get a high-def tuner built in, because I couldn't see the point of buying a set-top box.
Just to get the HD TV to go with the tuner.
That's right.
Well,
JD, that might be the case. Do you have to feed that tuner that swims around inside, or...?
The tuner, that was the joke that LG were running with in their advertiser campaign for a long time?
I think it was.
Nick, you had a purple pixel at one stage in your career of being an LG. Is it still there, or have I just brought back memories?
There are a number of purple pixels. You can't actually see them unless you get right up close. They don't detract from the viewing. What does detract from the...
one-eyed, one-horned, flying purple pixel eater.
Flying purple pixel eater is what I need. But what does detract from the viewing is over the last 12 months or so, is there's this annoying... sort of, it's very hard to describe, I don't even know what the technical term is for it, but an annoying grey sort of smudge or blur or fade or gradient on the left-hand side vertically of the screen. And it's not there usually when you turn the TV on, but after half an hour or so, you see this black sort
of
smudge.
The technical term for that is cheap bloody LCD panels.
Cheap panels.
I think you're on the mark there, Graham. I think that's a technical word for it.
It's a bit frustrating, but so I can see. And the other thing is frustrating.
But that's exactly what you get. I mean, sure, yours is an LG set. It's an older set, and I'm sure
and
the LG
ones. And it wasn't cheap
today,
at the time.
And none of them were.
Yeah. But this is, you know, that's the sort of effect you expect these days on the cheaper panels, because the good quality panels are going in at the higher price.
Mm.
Whereas if you buy a no-name, cheapy brand TV set that says it's got all the great features, that's the sort of effect you might get.
The other thing that frustrated the hell out of us was that there's only one HDMI input.
That would be very frustrating.
And Graham was saying, why don't you just put an HDMI card in your PC and plug it in? I said, well, ideally, that's what I would do.
But
only the one port.
Can I recommend a course of action for you?
Go ahead.
I think it's time to relegate the LG to the rumpus room upstairs and invest in a new Bravia for downstairs.
A new Bravia, Sony Bravia,
you think? Yeah, sub two grand will get you a nice panel these days, and you won't look back. You'll have plenty of HDMI things. You'll have internet Bravia. And that's one thing that actually does annoy me about the internet, the Bravias, is their internet portal. But anyway, that's for another day.
It's for another day. If you want to come and join us in the chat room, chat.techtalkradio.com.au if you're listening live, or if you want to read the show notes, if you're listening on the pod or on another fine community station, you can go to forum.techtalkradio.com.au.
They're not talking about what we're talking about in the chat.
No, they have their own show there. Yes. Hello to everyone in the chat. There's lots of people. I'm not going to read all the names, but it's great having everybody on board.
Mm. And if you've got questions about your home media center, Windows 7 or Kinect, I think it's called,
Directorial correspondence to Dr. Ron.
Yes, send him an email. No, just come up on our chat, chat.techtalkradio.com.au.
Dodgy LG panels at TikTok. No.
Actually, it's an older panel. We have to stress that.
It's an older panel.
Probably, what we're saying is probably not a reflection on the current generation of LG sets.
Early in the days.
He did. This is early adopter's disease.
Yeah.
You learn your lessons.
Yes, take the drugs.
You can also see us tonight, ustream.tv/user/TechTalkRadio AU. That's where we are.
I haven't opened up that panel yet.
And we're available now on Stitcher.
Yes, Stitcher. We've been stitched.
This actually segues nicely into the first item of correspondence.
All right, you're going to tell people what Stitcher is? Because I haven't worked out yet.
You found us,
which is really good. Hi, everyone listening to us on Stitcher. Now, we had people that said, why aren't you on Stitcher? So emails were sent. Now we are.
Now we're available on Stitcher. Stitcher is...
But it's caused controversy.
It has caused controversy. I'll explain briefly what it is.
I'm going to fire it up on my droid whilst you're talking about it. So I can find it.
If you go to stitcher.com from your mobile device, mobile telephone, iPod, whatever it is...
There is an app for it. Get the app, guys.
You can download an app. You might be on a BlackBerry. You might be on a Palm. You might be on an Android device, whatever you're on. You can go to stitcher.com, install a small application, and this will receive our latest podcast. So, like, the Stitcher service streams the latest podcast to your handset. So, if bandwidth is not an issue, you're sitting on the train, you forgot to update your iPod, then you can listen to us.
You can actually go to the techtalkradio.com.au on your iPhone, and it will do the same thing for you.
Is that right?
It will.
All right. GD on the Tech Talk Radio forum says...
What the hell, Stitcher?
Guy, he does. But he says, guys, rant coming... Podcast streaming, surely a contradiction. By definition, a podcast
is a program file that's been recorded and automatically downloaded by one's downloader, iPodder, Juice, and then played on a computer player. JD here is nodding sagely. A stream is just that. Once it's streamed, that's it. It's gone. If it's a live one, it can either be a live stream or a played stream.
There it is. It's off Stitcher. Can you hear that? That's last week's show. Andrew, now, that's going to do your head in, isn't it?
And, yes, he goes on. Now, Graham, you replied to GD on the forum.
I did.
What did you have to say to GD on the forum?
Well, I think he's got it wrong.
We've lost Andrew. He's listening to last week's show.
Sorry, I'm trying to work out how to turn it off.
Yeah, no, you listen to the show. That's
you listen to last week's show. It's quite a good one. Yeah, Graham, keep going.
GD has got it wrong.
What'll do everyone's head in is when we stream this one next week and you can hear last week's.
Yeah.
It's like your four levels of Inception. Graham,
okay. Give me a limbo before you know
There is no contradiction here. It's a mixture of podcasting and streaming, but all they're doing is using the podcasting side of things, which is only an RSS feed after all, as the input side and streaming the output side to you. So it's the same as Gmail. Instead of delivering the mail all the way to you, it's delivered to the Gmail website and you look at it live on the web there. There's no contradiction involved. It's just a happy merger of two technologies. You know, in effect, what they're doing is Stitcher are doing the podcatching for you. So instead of you having to have a pod client, download all this stuff, have to transfer it to your music device, you just go to the site and you listen.
There's some good other programs up there too.
There are, yes. There's a lot of really good stuff there.
I just found us, as you heard, coming out of the speakerphone.
There's a whole ton of stuff from the ABC and the BBC and from NPR in America, which is very good. I don't believe there's a contradiction. And for all the rationale, all the sensible arguments, have a look at the forum. I've written a detailed post there. Some of the English usage I'm going to have to correct along the way.
It's a very good post, Graham. It puts it into perspective for us. GD's quite upset. He's saying, guys, and he's got... open rants, and then he's got / rants at the end.
We must get / rant.
Grr, he says grr. So, but GD, I hope that puts it in perspective for you. Andrew's going to get / rant going. Now, if you want to find us on Stitcher, we're available under two categories. You can find us under Science and Technology / Tech Consumer Tips and Advice, or you can search for us under the regional category, which is World and International, South Pacific, Australia, and you'll find us there.
Okay. I just searched for Tech Talk Radio, came up.
Did it come up all right?
Yeah.
Excellent. Tim, via email, says, "Hey guys, check this out." We did, Tim. He sent us a link to an internode address, blog.internode.on.net, which says, "In September 2010, Internode has now announced a new series of T-shirt size easy broadband plans." This post...
I do. I have the press release here. We're going to talk about that tonight.
You've got it in your hot little hand.
Size?
T-shirt size. Yep. Small, medium, large, extra large, XXL, XXXL, triple XL.
Well, now you've mentioned it.
Please.
Yes. Basically, whatever it is, I'm just trying to find the right part here on the... But yes, they start off with a W data quote, popular easy broadband plan, $49.95 bundled from 50 gig to 100 gig per month. Introducing the 200 gig bundle, which is $70, 300 gig, which is $90, and they've basically been dubbed the small, medium, and large. So small is 50 to 100 gig, medium is 200 gig, and large is 300 gig. Then we go up into the extra large, which is 600 gig, and that's going to cost you $100. And the true terabyte plan, which is the XXL plan. And maybe because they've got all the brackets and the numbers around, you better go and check their website for accurate pricing on what I've just
not
said.
Not available on every exchange.
It has to be through Internode DSLAM, I believe.
Internode or the Optus resold. If they've got Optus ports there that they can use, they'll put them on that. But not through where there's only Telstra ports available.
Yeah, that's what it... Warlock's just summed it up beautifully in the chat. Said everybody's got a terabyte plan now. And he's true. Except for some.
I can feel a churn coming on.
A churn? Oh, absolutely.
Internode says that these plans will be released during the week of the 13th to the 17th of September 2010.
Yes.
So coming up soon, coming up next week or so.
Simon Hackett was teasing everybody with new and upcoming things in the Whirlpool forums during the course of the week. I was having a bit of a snoop there. Because they're very active. Internode's a good brand. Keep an eye on what they do in the forum. All right.
TARDIS3 via email says...
Michael.
So pleased you have a guest from Microsoft on the show. I'm using Windows Media Center 7 as my lounge room media center device. Some questions...
So is Dr. Ron.
I'd like you to ask on my behalf.
We'll get
half
to
a dozen
tonight.
Questions. We'll get to them tonight, TARDIS. Very, very good. Mark Diggins via the Tech Talk Radio contact form, says, Mark. Hi, Tech Talk team. G'day, Mark. Former Tech Talk panellist, Mark Diggins.
We'd have him on the show, just that right now it's about 3 in the morning in Boston.
Current Tech Talk panellist, but just sort of in sort of limbo.
He said he was going to go for a year and come back.
He said he was going to come back one day.
About 2 years now, and he's still there. Lydia did the same thing.
Just letting you know that I signed up for Google Voice and downloaded the app to my Google Nexus One phone. After putting some credit on the account, I gave it a try with a 65-minute call back home to family. That was longer than you got out of your trial, wasn't it? He's put money on it, though.
Yeah, no, I've put money on mine now, too.
Have you?
Yeah, I can harass you from my laptop.
Good. It worked great from my cell phone, says Mark. There was a slight distortion of speech for a few seconds in all that time, but can't say whether it was Google or my wireless connection and didn't affect the conversation. I have it set up so that if an international number is dialed on my cell phone, then it will ask me if I want to use Google Voice. Now, all my T-Mobile cell missed calls get routed to Google Voice and I get a text message with the translation, or I can choose to listen directly to it. Early days, but seems to do a reasonable job of converting speech to text. Cheers from Mark. That's good to hear from Mark.
Yeah, now I thought this was US only, and that's why Mark's been having such a play with it, but you've been able to play with it here, have you?
Yeah, only on a desktop. You can't put it onto a phone over here for obvious reasons, because certain telcos will go absolutely bresque if you could make a phone call from your mobile handset for just 2 cents for 30 seconds or a minute, whatever the rate is. Imagine that.
Yeah, two cents per minute to landlines.
Do them out of a job, wouldn't it?
Well, it's...
Yeah, I know.
Why not?
Food for thought. Hey, speaking of feedback, last week we talked about the HTC Dream, the Desire, which is the handset I have here at the moment.
Do you still like it?
And yes, I do. And good. I found out the reason why I got another version, the non-Telstra version. And that is because I can have version 2.2 of Android on there, Froyo, frozen yogurt. If you're on a Telstra one, bad luck, guys. You're still on 2.1. They haven't allowed it to come through yet to the phone. So you miss out on all the good things. Like Google Talk, which is what Mark was talking about there, because that can only be loaded up on 2.2. So I suspect they're going to sit on that one for a while, or as long as they can before pressure surmounts, before they release it to their handsets.
Is it not permitted for you to just install the upgrade anyway?
You can crack them and force them. I think it's a bit like jailbreaking, but I don't need to because I've got a real one as opposed to a non-real one, if
that
makes sense.
But the risk you'd face, I suspect, with the Telstra ROMs is that because it's a slightly different piece of hardware, the 2.2 may not load cleanly without a fair bit of hacking.
Yeah, may be the case. Mm. If anyone out there in the world listening to us has done it, let us know. chat.techtalkradio.com.au or send us an email. That'd be good. Any more Cora, Dr. Ron?
That is all. Okay. That's enough for the evening. I think it feedback at techtalkradio.com.au is the email address, of course.
Yes, indeed. Now, one thing I was just going to mention briefly, because it was a topic on the radio for discussion this evening on one of the government broadcasters, and I must admit, I've noticed this a bit myself whilst driving through the suburbs, and some other people out there may have, but there seems to be a death wish for pedestrians at the moment with white things in their ears that just have the volume up so loud that they don't hear things like sirens and car horns or even engine noises. They just blatantly walk out into the middle of a busy street thinking that people will stop and run over them. And that's pretty much the case. That's what happens. They just do get run over. So I don't know whether this is another form of Darwinism coming in thanks to MP3 players and people's ears, but we have a girl in our street, and every morning you see her walking down the street with the white things in the ear. I don't know what she's listening to. But she is. She just crosses the road.
She might be listening to us.
She's oblivious. I don't know.
But isn't this If you are, look up now. Isn't this just
backing out of the driveway
of people walking down the road with it completely oblivious to traffic? In any case,
pretty
whether
much
they wear an MP3 player or not.
Look. Yes, it's certainly got elements of that in there, JD. And it's probably also true to the people that, you know, the Lygon Street people who like having doof doof music very loud in their cars, and
forgetting there's pedestrians around.
Yeah, and other people for that matter. They can't hear other cars or sirens or anything like that. But it's worth talking about, I thought.
Now, I was listening to a government radio station about a week or so ago, and they were talking about this very thing. And what they're finding is that now that car manufacturers are making electric cars or hybrid cars, that the sound of the engine is very, very different and a lot less. Much less in terms of the decibel output than a normal combustion engine
under the hood, do you?
That's right. So what they're finding that they now have to do is manufacture some system in the car which emits noise.
Oh, no.
So that the ambient noise generator. An ambient noise generator so people can hear the car.
Hear the car coming through artificial noise.
Artificial noise.
We've made it quiet, now we've got to make it noisy again.
So that people are aware
of it. This is like recording pops and crackles on your CD.
We had the same thing with television. We went from analog to digital, now we've got all these great things to put noise back into pictures again.
You've probably got effects like in your editing suite to add noise so it looks like an old-fashioned television signal.
Absolutely. Maybe. We've got a new effect in our editing suite too. It's called audio delay. That's why if you ever watch a cheap panel, you go, why is the audio out of sync? We do that just for you guys.
People will know if they're listening, if they've driven electric carts before or electric type vehicles, like in a go-kart, JD, or in a warehouse, or like at the airport or something along those lines, you know that if it's, it doesn't have to be too noisy, but you can drive one of those things all the way up behind someone, you can tap them on the shoulder, and they turn around and they go, oh, there's a car behind me with its headlights on and its indicators flashing. Mm. They don't make any noise at all, a lot of them, and this is a big problem.
So this is going to be even more of a problem for people who wear white things in their ears.
For that lady in your street who's got the white things in her ears.
Trent, what gives me gripes about people who drive around in their cars with MP3 players in their ears? There's got to be a law about that. You're not supposed to do that, are you? Whilst driving, have the little things in your ears? I would have thought that would be a bit of a no-no.
I don't know if there's natural regulation about that. Does anybody know? Nobody knows.
Someone will tell us. I just thought that would be why would you put that
on? I think you'd probably cover that under drive without due care and attention or something.
Mm, anyway. All right.
I'm really sorry, guys, but I really have to disagree with everything that's just been said. Don't put noise generators on quiet electric cars. Let the streets become quiet. Let's have some personal responsibility. If you're going to cross the road, look both ways.
Talk Radio.
There you go, Graham. Just for you. Bang the spoons together.
Thank you.
Well, you're welcome.
You could put bird song on it, perhaps.
I'll...
All right. Let's talk about Apple, can we? And then after that, we're going to talk about Microsoft. We're going to talk about the big guys tonight. Now, during the course of the week, all sorts of things happened.
I've got a new icon on my desktop.
An I what?
An icon.
Icon?
Yes.
Oh, did you download it?
I did.
I downloaded it too, and I thought, what the? And
what's
anyway...
It?
It is iTunes, the abomination otherwise known as the thing that holds all of Apple's products together, bit of software you must have.
Yes.
Unless you don't own any Apple products and you don't
know.
No, I
do, but I've still got it on my old computer because
what version? Version 2 or 3?
I don't know because I'm not brave enough to move it to the new computer yet. I'm afraid I'll lose something or get lost or... So I've kept my old computer running after I've had my new one for ages and ages now, just because it's got iTunes on it, and I'm not brave enough to try and move it.
Oh, okay. Yeah, it does some strange things. But anyway, new icon, as Dr. Ron was saying, they've updated that. That's really good. JD, what's going on? Have you downloaded it? Had a look yet?
iTunes X. No, I tend to wait a little while before upgrading iTunes, because it used to routinely lose all your music when you upgraded. So.
I noticed that. Mm. It hasn't done that for me for a while. But, yes.
So I've held off, but apparently there's this ping thing that I think Dr. Ron mentioned in the news.
Ping.
So social networking to iTunes.
It's Twitter for radio heads.
There's a lot of discussion about this in the chat room at the moment. iTunes with ping, says Warlock. Ping. And a machine that goes ping.
Added ping, yes.
Yes.
Now, do you think, I've sent out a few tweets during, because I must admit, I was reading about it on the course during the week and sent out a few tweets. And a lot of people think the ping is just noise. It's they don't think it's going to do anything sort of wonderful for the brand.
Ping has a pong.
Yes, it does indeed. And it also led me to an article, which I read with great interest, being a bit of a computer programmer from way back and still dabbling in a bit of code. You know how when you build an application, it starts off and it's nice and squeaky clean and you've got subroutines everywhere and there's no rubbishy code in it?
Yeah.
Well, every now and again, you do an upgrade, don't you? Dr. Ron, I reckon you're probably as guilty as this as the next person, because I've done it.
Guilty as charged.
And it's quite easy just to leave a bit of code in there thinking, oh, I don't think that's going to be used, but I'll leave it there just in case. I might want to come back to a subroutine or something like that, which is in the code that you're doing. Now, if you look at iTunes, it basically started off as a program to rip CDs. And
Apple bought it from somebody, didn't they?
They did. And what you're describing is bloatware.
Bloatware, yeah. Now, this is the 10th reincarnation of this thing. Now, is it time to say, iTunes, you've done us proud. It's time to be put out to pasture and come up with a new
version of software? Don't forget, it did move from OS 9 to OS 10 back when all of that happened. Now, that's a little while ago now, admittedly. But they had to clean the code up to move it from one platform to the other.
Yeah, but they haven't cleaned up the feature set. They just keep adding and adding to justify their own existence. iTunes 10 doesn't allow you to make ringtones anymore.
No, they took that out. Yeah. No ringtones for you.
No, that's right. Hopefully that's a mistake.
So they took out a function that's actually...
Well, it is a mistake. Hopefully it was an oversight.
...part of its brief and put in social networking in a device that's supposed to synchronise your iPod.
Now, for people who aren't aware of what Ping is, basically it means you can follow your favourite artist and keep up to date with all the news and going on when they're doing tours, when their record albums come out.
Oh, okay. So it's not really just social networking. It is music related.
It is music related. And it also lets you see what your friends... Like, if you've got friends, like I can see if Dr. Ron buys something on iTunes, then it's going to send me, hey, Dr. Ron just bought the latest radio, whatever her name, Gaga person.
Yeah, is. Lady Gaga's Gaga. Greatest hits. So it's not just that everybody's buying it, it's CD, your mates one. Are buying this now. Yeah. Anyway, we'll wait and see. There's also a game centre in there as well. So
yeah, we'll what's going on with games?
Wait and see what happens there.
Because haven't the gaming, the new processors in these new iGadgets that are coming
because
out?
Because 400,000 people bought an iPad and no one knows what to do with it, so they're going to play a game on it.
iPad 2 is coming soon.
What's involved in iPad 2?
Well, we don't quite know, but we know it's probably got a camera.
Yeah, that's foregone conclusion, really, isn't it?
That's
yeah.
the biggest, bulkiest camera you're ever going to buy.
It will be a big camera, very big phone.
Hold your iPhone up and take a photograph. Mm. That's got to be good.
Your iPad.
Oh, yeah, your iPad, I mean.
The iPad that we have now doesn't have a camera in
no,
it,
it doesn't.
It. So I heard some talk about the iPad being able to support FaceTime. Is that right, or is that what they're going to do with the new
version,
camera?
Yeah, the new version of the iOS is coming out for all of the iDevices. So 4.1 is coming out shortly for everything, and 4.2 for the iPad's coming out in November.
Yep.
And that's where everyone's saying, oh, but it's got this software for photographic imaging, but it hasn't got a camera. So
let's
probably
drop a camera
in November, there will be a camera in the iPad.
All right, FaceTime is the new application which lets you make video calls if you've got one of the new, like the iPhone 4. But my understanding is it only works if you're connected to a Wi-Fi network. Mm. So it can't use a phone network for data. You must both be connected to a Wi-Fi network. And then you can find each other and FaceTime each other. And you can have like a video call. Pretty sure Sony Ericsson could do that about 6 or 7 years ago on the mobile phone network. But
why would you want to do that?
Apple's just caught up, so that's good. Why would you want to?
Yeah, because if you're on the same network, then, you know, chances are you're not far away from each other. You could just sort of say,
No, the device has to be on Wi-Fi. It doesn't mean that you necessarily have to be connected to on each other on Wi-Fi.
I didn't explain myself properly, Gray. I'm sorry. No, you both have to be connected to a Wi-Fi network, but they can be different Wi-Fi networks.
But you can't be on the tram on the mobile broadband. Well,
no, you can't be connected to a mobile telephone. You can't be connected to a mobile telephone network and use the data bearer on the phone network. It must be a Wi-Fi network.
Okay.
Which is quite odd.
Yes.
There's too many rules for these iGadgets. You buy these things and you don't know what you're buying in respect to the rules, do you? You can't use this on Wi-Fi. You can use this on Wi-Fi. You can only use this on 3G. You can't do that because, yes. Anyway. This is Tech Talk Radio.
There were a few other things that came out.
Yes, there were. So and you're going to buy the little...
I'm thinking the iPod Nano with the
four-centimeter
touchscreen.
And four icons.
Four icons only. You can move them wherever you like, but you can only have four.
The thing I like about this device... The thing I like about this is it removes choice from a lot of people. You know, the iPhone and the iPod has too much choice, so they've narrowed it down to four icons, which just eliminates a lot of choice.
We are talking a four-centimeter screen here. It's not that big.
Has it got a camera in it?
I don't think so. No, it doesn't.
Not yet.
And it doesn't play movies back, which the previous Nano did.
Ooh, a cutback.
So even though it's got a nice screen in it, it doesn't actually play back
movies.
So
the only thing the screen does is provide four buttons, and only four buttons, and you can't change them at all except move them about and change the order.
Although,
why couldn't you do that in hardware?
Well, you probably could, but the user interface for playing music is different too. So it uses the iPhone-style interface where you've got sliders and other various touch things to control the music.
Warlock in our chat room says, FaceTime can do 3G. Apple disabled it because AT&T blocked it.
Because their network wasn't capable of any data throughput.
Oh, right. Yeah. So what we need is unblocked iPads.
So wait for the jailbreak version. Someone will crack it, I'm sure. There's a new iPod
Apple
Shuffle
and,
out.
Apple and Google need to break the control that the telephone networks try to impose on our mobile data.
Well, the American telcos do, anyway.
Yeah, it's, only the American telcos.
It's a bit
what
sad
was,
over
what
there.
Was Andrew saying about not being able to put Android on his on his phone and the Froyo on
his HTC.
Phone. Yeah.
Yeah, that's...
Yeah, and that's primarily going to be a Telstra thing rather than an Android. Android haven't decided...
They need to protect their revenue streams, and of course, if we all go and start using data to make phone calls on, they're going to miss out on their 40 cents per 30 seconds or whatever they charge, which is ridiculous.
Yeah, but one day somebody's going to set up a network that says, you pay for the data you use, that's all you pay for, we don't care what you do with it, and everybody will move away to there, and they're going to have to change.
Here's hoping.
iPod Shuffle, Back to the Future. For those of you that have been following the Shuffle will know it got really, really, really small last time and you needed to use voice controls to make it work. People didn't like it. It's got buttons back on it again now, so it's grown a bit to make the buttons work. So it's back out again. New iPod Touch, it's thinner, it's got a camera, it's, yeah, that's nice. I don't like the Touch terribly much, but anyway, it's there. And for me, the new Apple TV.
The $99 special, I think that's US dollars.
It is, $129 Australian.
And it's become incredibly small. They've shrunk it.
It's tiny. It has no
storage. They've removed some issues. Yes, and Adam's got a really interesting couch on this guy tonight.
I bet he does.
One of the other interesting things, JD, which I thought about, the iOS or 4.2 iOS. Is it iOS or iOS? How do they pronounce it in Apple land?
I don't know, to be honest. Because I've been calling it iOS. But
yeah, because I thought, well, they call it OS X, so maybe it's OS, but then they put an I in front of it. Would it be iOS or iOS?
I would have gone with iOS.
Yeah.
iOS is a moon around Mars, isn't it?
Yeah.
No,
yeah.
That's Io.
Io. Yes. Yeah, well, maybe it's the plural moon.
Edit that bit out, Gray.
Anyway, Apple's moving new 4.2 iOS or iOS, whichever side of the river you'd like to be on, will be able to stream both music and video to your TV.
AirPlay.
If you picked up one of the Apple's, $129 Apple TVs.
So at the moment, there's AirTunes in iTunes. So there's a few that haven't upgraded.
Oh, I'm getting very confused here. iTunes, AirTunes.
And that means you could play your music from iTunes back through any other device. So your Apple TV could do it, your various other devices, your, I can't remember what the damn thing's called. Now, Airport Express can play it back as well.
Mm-hmm.
Now with AirPlay, they've changed the name slightly, you can play from one device to another in your house. So you can play off your iPhone to your Apple TV to your computer,
Well, which is lucky because the Apple TV now is so crippled and cut back that it can't do anything on its own.
Well, they've made it tiny.
They're pushing it to the cloud.
They've taken away storage so that you have to rent movies.
You can't save anything on it. Yeah.
Well, you can stream from your PC, which is what I actually do. So you can stream from iTunes from a central server, if you like, which is the way I run it at home anyway. I don't actually store anything on the Apple TV. So now it's cheap. You put it a bit like the Western box. You can put it wherever you want and stream off a central point.
I'm going to break from tradition here and scare a lot of people. Here's Adam Turner's view from the couch.
Apple's tiny Apple TV media player has ditched onboard storage to embrace the cloud. But why would I want an Apple TV without a hard drive? Apple has unveiled a tiny new Apple TV at about a quarter the size and slashed the price to $129. The trade-off is that Apple has stripped out the hard drive and removed the component video output and the analog audio output, so now it only talks to a television with HDMI. My question is, what's the advantage of removing the hard drive other than it makes the device smaller and cheaper? Cars would be smaller and cheaper if you replace the engine with a rubber band, but that doesn't make it a good idea. Now, I've had an Apple TV for a few years, not because I felt I needed one, but because I had to get one to hack for a magazine feature. These days, my Apple TV's primary job is to store a copy of my music library. Using my iPhone as a remote control, I can stream music from the Apple TV to speakers around the house without the need for a computer to be up and running. This is incredibly handy, especially during and after dinner time, when you've deliberately shut down your computer to focus on some family time. It's also handy during the day if you want to play the Wiggles in the rumpus room for the kids coming from the Apple TV, while you listen to the Dandy Warhols in the lounge room coming from your notebook. If I upgraded to the new Apple TV, I'd need a computer running whenever I wanted to listen to music. I don't think it's possible to get the Apple TV to play music directly from an iTunes library on a network drive. It seems the new Apple TV has the ability to wake up a Mac to gain access to content, which would still leave PC users out in the cold and presumably Mac users who tend to shut down their machine rather than hibernate it. Occasionally I use the Apple TV to hire a movie, although I don't buy movies from the iTunes store because I'd rather own the DVD or Blu-ray disc. If you are in the habit of buying movies and TV shows to watch on the Apple TV, you could find the lack of a hard drive presents several challenges. Movie rental devices generally rely on internal storage in order to buffer a few minutes of video to ensure you get smooth playback. The slower your internet connection and the higher the video quality, the more you need to store in the buffer. The new Apple TV features hidden flash memory for video buffering, but Apple is reluctant to talk about the details. You'll need several gigabytes of storage on hand if you're trying to watch a high-def movie on a slow 1.5 megabit per second connection. Even then, you might need to download the entire movie again if you want to watch it more than once during your 48-hour rental period, especially if you've hired several movies at once. Now, I spoke to Apple, and in such a scenario, the Apple TV will, quote, manage the content so that you don't have to download it again, according to Apple Australia spokeswoman Fiona Martin. So there must be a fair amount of onboard storage, maybe 10 gig or more. Apple just doesn't want you to use it. Why? You're really at the mercy of the capacity of Apple TV's hidden flash memory and how it's utilized, something Apple is reluctant to talk about in detail because it tends to shun such technical questions in favor of protecting Apple's Just Works reputation. When you start watching a movie, the iTunes Store manages the seamless, smooth playback of that title, according to Fiona Martin from Apple. This implies Apple might be getting around the buffering issues by using variable video quality depending on your download speed, as is used by Sony's Bravia Internet Video Service. This would mean that people on slow connections were forced to watch low-grade video, negating one of the Apple TV's key advantages over the disappointing video quality of, we'll say, the PlayStation 3 or Xbox 360 Australian movie rental services. When pushed for more details on the Apple TV's buffer capabilities, Apple's Fiona Martin replied, "It streams everything without frozen screens or stutters. Video looks crisp and clear. As we say, it just works." In other words, to quote The Wizard of Oz, ignore the man behind the curtain. Of course, the Apple TV also lets you purchase movies and TV shows, but this won't work with the new Apple TV because there's no hard drive to keep them on. I'm told you'll still be able to purchase movies and TV shows via the Apple TV and set up season passes for TV shows, but the job will be handed off to your computer. In the US, Apple now lets you rent episodes of TV shows for 99 cents, but this isn't available in Australia. It really seems that Apple is moving away from the idea of you owning content to this transient idea of you renting content and then it disappearing. It's all part of their idea to have everything come from them. They want complete control over you, your lounge room, and your wallet. So if you want to use the Apple TV to watch movies or TV shows you've already downloaded, you'll need to have a computer up and running. Again, a major hassle if you've filled your old Apple TV with kids shows and set it up as a device which just works. The whole point of the original Apple TV was that you could enjoy your content without the need for a computer or to chew through bandwidth every time you wanted to watch a video, listen to music, or look at your photos. That kind of situation might work perfectly if we all had fibre running to our doorsteps, but we're a long way from getting that in Australia, if ever. Meanwhile, the Apple TV just looks like it wants to separate that gap between the internet haves and have-nots. Even if the new Apple TV comes with new features, there's no need to strip out the hard drive while they're at it. It's not progress if it's stripping away functionality rather than adding it. You can now stream content from your computer to your Apple TV. Plus, you can use AirPlay, which is an update to AirTunes, to stream content from an iPod, iPhone, or iPad. And it also works with third-party gear as well as the Apple TV and AirPort Express. These are all great improvements, but I don't see why we need to sacrifice the hard drive in order to get them. I'm sure the Steve Jobs reality distortion feel will make ditching the hard drive seem like a great leap forward. Apple's new Apple TV webpage claims you don't have to worry about managing your storage or syncing to your iTunes library. Was anyone really worried about that? Now you need to worry about streaming instead. The cloud might be the next big thing, but the new hard driveless Apple TV seems like a great leap back.
Entertaining, informative, and independent. You're listening to Tech Talk Radio.
Intently listened to in the studio, that one.
So if I rent a program for 99 cents, does that mean once it's deleted and I've finished watching it, I get my 99 cents back?
No.
Where's my 99 cents gone?
You've paid for it just to rent it, to have it for a short amount of time.
And if you want it
again,
enjoy
the pleasure of the show.
If you want it again, you have to pay another 99 cents.
But that's not renting. Renting means that...
No. Yeah, that's renting.
Oh, okay, that's renting. Yeah, all right. But like, as
when you rent a car, you don't get your rental fee back when you return the car.
Damn, don't you? Oh, that's what I've been doing. That's why the police are always after me. Now, Warlock in our chat room said something which was chat.textradio.com.au. On Amazon, you can buy TV shows for 99 cents.
What does that mean? You download and keep?
You keep it.
Yeah, but that's all a TV show's got to be worth if you think about it.
The more that the content providers put restrictions on how you use the content, the more people will move to BitTorrent and pirating the content.
Not if they use an Apple TV.
Well, they won't use an Apple TV. They'll use BitTorrent and a WDTV Live. Yeah. It's as simple as that. They just won't bother. And the music industry is slowly learning this. And we had a lot of, you know, restricted, you buy your song on iTunes, but you can only play it on certain devices and you can only move it a certain number of times and then you lose access because it's got DRM on it. And now we've got finally MP3s that are high quality and without DRM that you can buy from iTunes and other places. And this is because they've learned the lesson at that level, and the video side of the industry is yet to learn the lesson that the more they lock it down, the more people will work around it.
Yeah, personally, I mean, we were chatting off air before. I like the idea of the season pass, but I'd take it one step further and just say I'll pay, you know, $30 a month for unlimited access to the network library, and I can watch whatever I want whenever I want.
That's a different thing. People will happily subscribe to that sort of thing, particularly if the library's nice and close and you've got a nice fiber connection between you and it. The other thing with this Apple TV that's just dumb is that it can't store anything locally. And the primary method people are going to use to connect it onto their networks is wireless. So you've got your wireless network at home, you've got a limited amount of bandwidth on your wireless network at home, and you're going to occupy most of it streaming video from one room to the other that's completely unnecessary, that could be just on a hard drive in the device.
If you want to watch high def, I actually stream wirelessly standard def stuff all the time. That's the way my Apple TV's set up, but you're right. If you want to do it on high def stuff,
how's that going to work in cluster housing environments, like in a middle of a high density living area where everyone's got Wi-Fi,
and all the Wi-Fis are all on the same group of channels? Everybody's going to interfere with everybody else, slow everything down, and someone your next door neighbor is going to put on their microwave or make a phone call on a 2.4 gigahertz phone, and the video will
go and get
stop.
A coffee.
Everyone's television's going to lock up and not work.
Yeah, it's just
Anyway, there's
Tony
the frustration.
Abbott, are you listening? Wireless is not the answer.
And also, just before we finish on the Apple TV, I think everyone in the chat said it a few hundred times, and most people know, but whilst it is a high-def machine, it's only 720p.
Which I don't think is that high-def, to be
fair. Fraud def.
Yeah, fraud def.
Yeah, exactly.
Fraud
def. Oh, dear, it's another word we've invented.
Yeah. All right, you're listening to Tech Talk Radio. We're going to chill out very short. There's so much to talk about tonight, yet it was a slow news week. We've covered off only a...
On Tech Talk Radio, there are no slow news weeks.
No, there isn't, is there? That's the thing, isn't it? I'm going to put my Apple stuff down for the time being. I'm going to talk briefly, actually, because this all ties in with it. Samsung launched their Galaxy tablet during the course of the week, which if you go and have a look on some of the tech websites, you'll see it there. It's a very nice looking device. It's been touted as being a bit of an iPad killery type sort of thing.
You don't need an iPad. You can have a tablet running Android.
So this is running the Google operating system Android. Yeah, on Samsung. So, and obviously, I've been very impressed of late with what I've found on the Android shop. What about you, Dr. Ron? Have you been to the Android shop in the last few weeks? It's going gangbusters.
It is going gangbusters. A lot of good applications there. A couple of good ones I've loaded up very, very recently, last couple of weeks. Tram Hunter. I saw someone either refer to that in the chat room or on the forum or somewhere.
Yeah, we've seen that somewhere. That's Melbourne-centric.
Melbourne-centric one.
The Apple version is Tram Tracker. I assume it's much the same.
It's much the same. It works very, very well. Very nicely polished app. And I was playing around with the barcode reader.
Oh, that's fun.
That's a lot of fun. And loaded the Google Shop application so you can search the Google Shop for whatever it is that you scan with your barcode reader.
Can I give you an example? I actually used the barcode reader during the course of the week on the back of an instruction manual for a TV that I bought.
Did it work?
And I scanned it, and it came up with a model number, and I said, search, and it said, here's the PDF for it. And I go, oh, beautiful. Two clicks, and I had the manual for the television set by scanning the barcode on the back of the TV.
There you go. I've got my barcode scanner up now. I'm looking to scan something.
But anyway, that was the use of it. See, that's only going to become more and more prevalent, I think, as everyone wises up to it.
Absolutely. And Stitcher client, of course. I've loaded up Stitcher as well.
Yeah, it's good.
Oh, there's a barcode. Hang on.
Anyway, getting back to the Samsung Galaxy tablet, it's a slim-looking 380-gram device providing over 8 hours of video with 4,000 milliamp hour battery. That's pretty good. That's a lot of video watching. It's got one of these new AMOLED screens. Now, that's the same technology that they use in the Apple stuff, isn't it? There, JD says he's pointing a piece of paper.
The Retina display.
Nah. Well, isn't it AMOLED? Isn't it that high intensity? No? I know the retina stuff means that they've got more clusters of pixels than you can possibly define with your eye. I think that's what they mean by the retina thing, isn't it? So, anyway, yes, I don't know when it's going to come out, but hopefully there'll be it'll be flavors like the iPad is, a 32 or 64 gig version, and we might see it in Australia very shortly. Accessories for the tab will include a desktop, car and keyboard docks, a car dock for a tablet. Dock. That's interesting, isn't it? A leather case, and here we go, the piece de resistance, take note, Apple, an HDMI output cable and carrying case. So there you go, HDMI out of your pad into your telly. Good for presentations. It might strike a few chords in the corporate world, especially if you want to take a video along and plug it into your telly, or even if you want to go around and show your mates what you got up to on the weekend, because you've probably edited all that sort of stuff. So there you go.
You can watch your nice big PowerPoint presentations in HDMI high def fullness.
Yes. You might even get 1080i out of it, or even 1080p if you're lucky. So, anyway, we're going to be talking to Jeff Alexander from Microsoft very shortly after we go to the next break, and we're going to be talking about the media centers. We're going to be talking about home server. Have you got a home server apart from a media server, Dr. Ron?
Negative.
No?
No, just the media center.
I'm interested to find out about the market for this sort of technology. I don't know whether it's going to be, for the mums and dads or what, but we'll ask Jeff. And also, Connect, which is
the new game,
the new
environment
thing for Xbox 360. It's the not having a controller in your hand.
The controller you have when you don't have a controller.
Yeah, it's going to be interesting to see how that all goes and when its launch date is. I don't think it's too far away now, and whether it's a plug-in or whether it's all part of itself, but I think it's just a standalone box. It sits on top of the telly. And because the thing is that Xbox has been pretty much... It's had a very commanding lead in the game console market, especially with Halo and things like that I was told about today. Everyone loves that. Very big selling game. So we'll find out all about that after this.
You're listening to Australia's most informative technology show.
Tech Talk Radio.
Remember when Tech Talk Radio first hit the airwaves some 5-odd years ago? Listeners could ring up and say their bit. Remember that? Well, it's back.
The Tech Talk Radio feedback line has risen from the ashes. So if you have a comment, criticism, correction, or you just plain want to get it off your chest, then start dialing 03-8682-8836. The Tech Talk Radio feedback line is your direct line to being heard by millions of Tech Talk listeners around the planet. So get dialing 03-8682-8836. That's 03-8682-8836. Call now.
But we've run out of steak knives.
Android-powered, flash-enabled devices. I like the sound of that.
Yeah, the thing might end up costing a little bit more, working a whole lot better, and being a whole lot more future-proof.
And there's an LED backlight as well.
It's a humdinger. Rip schnorter.
It's a pearl of terror.
Are they selling well on eBay?
Oh, yes.
Not that type of guy.
You sound disappointed, Graham.
Entertaining.
Now, I'd like to introduce a conspiracy theory at this point in time because...
Oh, good.
Informative.
We've got another case here of a complete and utter lack of perspective.
Independent.
No, the couch is unbleepable.
You're listening to Tech Talk Radio.
Unbelievable.
It is unbelievable, you're right.
You're listening to Tech Talk Radio.
You are indeed. Welcome back to Tech Talk Radio. Andrew McComb. Justin Dunlop is in this evening. Dr. Ron. Graham Callaghan.
Present.
Dr. Ron.
Speaking.
You're probably the, apart from the man sitting next to you, I'm pointing towards Justin there, the Apple man. You're probably the last person to come across to Windows 7 in this room. How's the transition been? Has it worked for you?
The transition's been good. It's working very well for me.
Hmm?
I love the new operating system. It's great.
Now, you have a Windows Home Media Server. Does it talk? Do you use it to talk to it, or are they standalone systems that you've got?
Home Media Center.
Yes, center. Yeah. I've got a Home Media Center, Windows 7 Media Center machine in the lounge room, and that's plugged into my big TV, and it's plugged into my stereo system as well. Yeah. I've got a wireless keyboard and a wireless mouse, and anyone can sit on the couch and operate the media centre.
Excellent.
It's got a TV tuner card in it, so I can record programs off air. I can use it to look at the electronic program guide.
Now, that's an interesting question, because they changed the EPG lately. Does it work?
Well, it works very well. It gets the information and it formats it in its own special way, and it looks rather nice and spiffy on the screen. You can right-click on programs and say, record this series, record now, stop recording this series. You can do whatever you like. It's very good.
What's the WAF like?
The WAF is very, very high. It has high WAF.
Very high WAF?
Yes.
The WAF acceptability factor.
Yes.
The WAF.
It's very good. Very much better than the previous version of Media Center, which, as I said last week, I think it was fine as long as you didn't try and use it.
And what sort of spec machine?
It's a... The machine is not... It's not a super spec machine, Graeme, is it? The one that we were playing with the other night when you were...
I didn't look at the spec of the machine. It was responsive and quite happy. I didn't notice that it was... that there was any issue with the spec of the machine.
No, just a little machine. It's got a couple of gig RAM in it, and I think it's got a 1 terabyte hard disk in it.
Was it easy to set up?
Yeah, very easy. The Media Center itself was easy to set up. As we said earlier in the program, Graeme and I were wrangling for some time with the aspect ratio, but that was because of my television.
No, that was
a Media Center.
That was a video card versus television problem. That wasn't Microsoft's fault, I should say.
That's right. But Media Center itself as a product was easy to set up, and it works very well.
Excellent. All right. Jeff Alexander is, according to the bio, is an IT pro evangelist for Microsoft, and he started back in 1987. That's a long time ago. That would have been the Windows 3.1 days.
I think our first question had better be, what on earth is an IT pro evangelist?
Okay. Jeff, what's an IT pro evangelist?
Well, hi, guys. Well, yes, I did start back in the 80s, and that was a long time ago. It was actually DOS 4.0.
Oh, no.
I remember that.
DOS 4.
So I supported DOS 5. I supported Word for DOS 6, all those kind of old products. An IT pro evangelist is... somebody that goes out and talks to the IT pro community. I talk to guys that manage servers, deploy desktops, and get them excited about new technology. So the idea is to talk everything about infrastructure products. I present at large events. I blog. I'm on Twitter. All that kind of stuff. So getting them excited about things that are coming up anywhere from 6 months to 18 months out. And like with Windows 7, you guys were talking about that earlier. I started using that probably just after PDC in 2009.
Oh.
And so we use stuff really, really early in the piece, whether it be server operating systems or client operating systems or that kind of stuff. And it's like they give me toys and I get to go tell people about it.
Sounds like you've got the perfect job, Jeff. I'd love to, if someone gives you toys and you go out and play with them and try and get people excited about it.
That's right, and I'm getting a new laptop later this month so that I've got the latest and greatest kit, as they say.
Mm.
It's a good job. Been in it for about 5 years. It's the longest job I've had at Microsoft, actually, because I used to work in Microsoft's internal IT for about 6 years, and this is fun. This is a lot of fun.
Now, you're based in Australia, I take it?
Based in Sydney, yes.
Okay.
So Microsoft's office in North Ryde.
Ah. All right. Now, tell us a little bit about the server technology. Particularly, I guess, Windows 7 is now the flavour that we're all used to. And, of course, with the home server, which I'm not that familiar with, but I'm more familiar with the small business servers and things like that. But what's home server for those who don't know it?
Well, home server is a product that we saw a market need for that probably about 3 or 4 years ago, and it's built on Windows Server 2003 R2. And essentially what it is, if you think about it, it's targeted at families and allows them to organize their photos, the music, everything that they've got in their digital life in one location. And essentially when we think about home server, we ask people, do you have broadband at home? Do you have two or more PCs in your house? And do you have important stuff on those PCs? How many times have you heard people say, I need to organize my stuff on my PCs?
Yeah, people's stuff
and
is very important to them.
People's stuff is very important, particularly pictures. I mean,
yes.
The photos I have of my kids are all in digital format. And
do you have them backed up?
Yes, about 3 or 4 different ways.
Absolutely. That's what I love the cloud
they're
for.
They're on the home server. Yeah. They're on DVDs stored in a place where I can grab them in case there's a fire. They're in the cloud.
Mm.
They're all over the place. So... But the other question is, how often do you back up your PCs? When I talk to people, they don't back up their PCs. They go, huh, back up? Why do I have to do that? So one of the things that Home Server does is it does a backup of every PC in your house every night.
Now, does it back up the whole PC or does it just back up the stuff?
It backs up the entire PC.
So if the hard disk crashes, they can put another hard disk in and get everything back to exactly how it was, all their programs installed, all that stuff?
Correct.
That's impressive.
What it does is it does a bare... What we have in Home Server, and like say, for example, you had, say, four Windows 7 machines in the house. Now, of course, all those machines share the same type of data on them, right? So they have the same operating system on them. So what we do is we don't back up Windows 7 four times. We realize that there's some files that are the same, and so we only back up the files that are the same once. It's a technology we call single instance storage, so that what happens is the machines get backed up to the home server, and then we can do a bare metal recovery. So if your wife's, I heard you guys talking about the WAF factor. I love the WAF factor.
We've been pulled up in the chat room there, Jeff. We've been asked to call it the PAF for the partner acceptability factor because there are there's some ladies there that are wrangling with husbands, I think, over technology as well. So we'll
yeah, that's true.
No, the PAF factor,
Yeah, absolutely. There's, but the thing is if the hard drive dies in a laptop, you just take the hard drive out, put another hard drive in, go to the home server and go, right, you boot off a little DVD that's a restore CD that comes with the home server software. You boot off that CD and you just choose a date and time where you want to actually, and it'll basically suck the whole machine back down to the machine, and away you go. The machine, it's like your partner never lost their... never thought lost their data.
What if the client machines aren't all Windows 7 machines? If I've got an older laptop that I'm keeping going for my little sister, or I've got a netbook or something that's running Windows XP, participate in that?
No problems at all, one of the things that, actually, because Home Server was out for quite a while, obviously it came out before Windows 7 did, so it was really around when Windows XP and Windows Vista were out there. And so it, we released PowerPack 3 to actually take advantage of some of the new features in Windows 7, particularly Home Group, and we also integrate with Media Center in Windows 7. So if you've got a bunch of recorded TV on your Media Center, what will happen is when you connect the Media Center to your home server, it'll say, "Hey, I noticed you have a home server. Would you like to back up all your recorded TV so that other people in the house can watch it?"
Dr. Roy, that's a good idea.
Yeah, I've seen the home server settings, Jeff, I think in the Media Center setup area, in the settings area, and thought, I wonder what that is. Must read up a bit on that one day, and now you've explained it.
So what basically you do is you go around, after you've installed your home server, you go around to every machine in your house and you just put a little bit of software on there. That then connects you to the home server and sets up all the backups. It also creates a share for the user. So the user can put their files up there if they want to do that. Nobody else in the house can get access to that folder unless they know the password. The other thing that Home Server does is it allows you to get access to your files if you're outside of the house. So if you ever travel and you're taking happy snaps when you're traveling and you want to share that stuff with your partner, you can. We have a remote capability, a remote website that you can connect to your home server, and you can upload stuff, download stuff inside and outside of the home.
Does that work for people on dynamic IP connections? They need a static IP and a domain name and all that to do this?
No.
No?
No, what happens is we partnered with GoDaddy in the US.
Oh, yeah?
So when you go and set up remote access, you get a certificate from GoDaddy, and you basically get a domain on homeserver.com.
Ah, right, okay.
So it's all set up and away you go. And they've made a lot of improvements in the next version of Home Server, which is codenamed Bell, which they've made a lot of better progress in setting it up for routers because they've had some challenges with setting up with some routers and stuff like that. But I have a Cisco, one of those Linksys, all-in-one router jobbies or whatever they call it. And it found that router fine. No problems whatsoever, and I was able to set up my remote access. So when I'm traveling, which I've been doing a lot lately, you can connect back to your house, download stuff, like if there's some music you forgot or you need to upload some photos that you've taken. That then gets shared around the house to all the machines in the house through Home Group and all that kind of stuff in Windows 7.
Jeff, do you have to be wary of bandwidth usage and things like that, especially if it's backing stuff up in clouds and stuff, or more so than you would normally?
It's not the backup to the cloud is obviously an option, and that's through Home Server has a development community that allows them to develop add-ons. So, for example, you guys have heard of Jungle Disk, I think, is one of the cloud backup programs, I believe. And there's a plugin for that that allows you to take your data and push it into the cloud and choose specific data. But with the home server itself, all that data is backed up directly to the home server. And that tends to be where it's actually shared. So all your photos, your videos, your recorded TV can be all pushed up to the home server. And then the home server becomes your kind of central hub for the rest of the house. So everything that's on the home server can be pushed around the home. And the great thing about it is it doesn't require a very beefy machine. It'll run in 512 meg of RAM. It just needs a lot of storage.
Now, do you have to be tech savvy to set this all up and get it going, or out of the box? Is it straightforward for a... I guess every family has a Dick Smith in them these days, the younger members of the family who like setting these things up. So how easy is it to get going? How much time would you invest in it, Jeff?
Well, it depends upon whether you buy one of the pre-done home servers, like HP. HP is one of our largest partners. So HP make the MediaSmart server you might have seen. It's about the height of about four coffee cups. And that's essentially a very, very small server. It comes with this big color poster that you just plug it into your router, turn it on, and it goes through its process, then connect your other machines to it, and usually it's about a half an hour, you're ready to go, and you're backing up machines. It's actually very, very simple. The HPs don't even have a monitor port on them. They just have an Ethernet connection and power. And you just plug them into your router, make sure they're plugged into the router, and turn it on, put the CD into one of your machines, and connect to the home server.
What sort of investment are people looking at for something like this?
They start about $500 Australian.
Wow.
So the HP MediaSmart, I think, with 1 terabyte of storage is about $500. If you're going up into the 2 terabyte version, you go to about $899. And the idea is that the MediaSmarts have 4 drive bays in the front of the machine, so all you have to do is just go up to your local retailer, buy a 3.5-inch drive, whack it into the hot swappable drive, and then you can just add that storage to your total storage pool in the home server itself.
And how is it licensed or scaled, Jeff? Is it like if I've got a certain number of machines on my network, so I've got 3 workstations or 5 workstations, do I pay like a per-client license for this to operate?
No, you're licensed to have 10 machines connect to it. So that's the idea. Obviously, that's a home. We hope that most homes will fit within that.
Graham's counting on his fingers as we speak.
I counted 6 the other day. I was driving home going, what if they're going to ask me how many machines I've got? And I kind of worked it out. I've got 6 at home and 6 at work, not counting virtual machines. So
I think that'll probably cover me. I don't think that I would exceed that.
Yeah, and later on we're going to be coming out with products that are going to cover homes that have more PCs. So that's something further on down the track.
And that's going to happen because people are going to, or some people are going to want to drop a media center PC beside maybe 2 or 3 different TVs in the house.
Yep.
And, as well as their desktop PCs, as well as their laptops, they might have a netbook as well. So, yeah, it gets up there.
You could potentially get there, and I see it. I mean, my sister and her house is not they're not very tech savvy, but they've got 3 or 4 PCs in the house. Because all of her sons have to have PCs and all that kind of thing. So, but it's been around since about 2007 or probably before that, 2006. And it's now the next version is going to be based on Windows Server 2008 R2. So that's coming out, I believe, sometime early next year. And that's codenamed Vail, which has got some really... They've done a lot of work underneath the covers. They've changed the dashboard a little bit. It's obviously based on a new operating system, so it's a better operating system than 2003. One of the things you guys might be interested in, though, with the next version is we're going to support DLNA appliances right out of the box.
That's your Sony Bravias and the likes, all those big gadgets that sit in your home entertainment system.
Correct. So obviously that's the way we're going to see the future of streaming stuff to different devices. So the next version will have that ability built in.
You're listening to Sorry, you're listening to Tech Talk Radio. We're talking to Jeff Alexander, who's an IT pro evangelist with Microsoft, talking about home server and the likes. Jeff, a question in relation to, I think, something that's probably in the top of mind of most parents these days. You mentioned about having personal folders which you can password protect to protect your stuff. But what about being the parent who's allowing young people in the household to have internet access? Do you have much control about what they can see or what times of the day they can log on and whether they're doing homework rather than surfing the web and things like that? How does the home server environment work there?
Well, home server is not going to be really used for that. That's where you would use Windows 7's parental controls capability or the Windows Live family safety program that comes with the Windows Live Wave 4 beta. So essentially what you can do with Windows 7 is you can set up parental controls to say, they can only use the PC from, say, 5 o'clock till 9 p.m., and then 15 minutes before you start a timer countdown that says, you're going to be logged off in a few minutes. So Windows 7, Home Server doesn't do anything in that area, but Windows 7 certainly does, and so does Windows Live Essentials.
I can just hear it now while I'm sitting watching television in the evening. You hear, "Oh, Dad," as it's logged them off in the evening. You say, "It's time to go to bed, girls."
Yeah, and Dad's going to say, "Well, there's nothing I can do. It's the rules."
Exactly. That's
what the machine does it now.
It's the new wave, the 21st century version of, "Oh, Dad."
Yeah.
Lena in the chat makes the point that's where you would use, quote, parenting.
Well, that's true, correct, isn't it? Yes. So,
which is what we've said quite repeatedly on Tech Talk Radio, that, yeah, nothing beats a bit of supervision.
That's right. Make sure you... one of the best advices I have is to keep the PC central to the household.
Yep.
Keep them out of their bedrooms.
Absolutely. Sorry, off you go, Greg.
Yeah, just one more question about Windows 7 and Home Server. Windows 7, we got this new concept of libraries for our documents and our photos and our music, which... has potential, and I think people are only just starting to come to grips with out there in user territory. Does Windows Home Server integrate really well with that concept of libraries on Windows 7?
It we've partially taken that with PowerPack 3 in Windows Home Server. So with PowerPack 3, we provided the ability to integrate into a Home Group.
Right.
With the next version. It'll
which
see
is not quite
group.
The same thing, is it?
No. With the next version of Home Server, which is Vail, it'll be much more tightly integrated into libraries.
Ah, right. Okay. Because that's what some of us are going to... Yeah?
Sorry, yes. No, PowerPack 3, it improves that experience, but it'll just get a lot better in the next version
in
of
the next
Vail.
When's the next version out again?
I haven't had a date yet. Right now, we've had a beta refresh that just dropped the other day, which you can try out and play around with, download it from the Kinect site. But I haven't heard official date, but I believe it's sometime early next year.
We'll be looking forward to that one.
All right. Yeah. You're listening to Tech Talk Radio. We're speaking with Jeff Alexander from Microsoft about all things sort of serverish and home-related, and we're going to take a break, and we're going to come back and ask him about gaming consoles, just in time for Christmas, really, isn't it? Because we'll be looking for those great Christmas presents. I know I won't be. Well, we've done our Christmas shopping already, but that's it. All right, hang in there, Jeff. We'll be back in a moment. We'll take a break and more after this.
You're listening to Australia's most informative technology show, Tech Talk Radio.
Now, let's talk about Freeview.
Hey, someone just joined the wave.
They're the people I want to avoid the calls from.
Comes in very handy, especially when your files get really, really big and corruption takes place.
So you went, A.
Dude, it's not even a beta. It's just for us to play around with.
They also cited taxes and freight costs.
Just mount it on your desktop and run it direct.
It's a big risk.
So you watch the webcam.
Yeah.
You're listening to Australia's most informative technology show, Tech Talk Radio. You're listening to Australia's most informative technology show,
Tech Talk Radio.
Well, we like to think so. Hello, we're back. This is Tech Talk Radio. I'm Andrew McComb. We've got Justin Dunlop in this evening. We have Dr. Ron in this evening. We have Dr. Graham in this evening. And on phone, we have Jeff Alexander from Microsoft in this evening, which is pleasant. It's nice always having someone on this fader, which I don't get to use all that often. It's very nice.
Good to hear stuff from the horse's mouth, too.
It is indeed.
Microsoft themselves.
Now, have you seen the... there's been a lot of talk in recent times about the, you know, these controllerless video games. And I think it was probably around about 12 months ago, they had a project, they being Microsoft, had a project called, I think it was Natal or Natal, depending upon which accent you wanted to pronounce the A on. Anyway, like all good things, it's had a bit of a name change and it's now called Kinect. And I was talking to Jeff actually on the phone before we did the interview, and he said, oh, he's got a rack in his living room. Now, that's what I call a someone who's
a serious
who's got
gaming
some,
console.
Some good, yeah, it is a serious.
It's only a half rack, it's not a huge one. It's.
Oh, you've just spoiled it, Jeff. I was picturing this beautiful 6-foot rack with all these good toys in there, but oh, it's only a 3-footer now.
It's about 5.5 feet. So, and it's got two machines in it, an amplifier, networking equipment, all that kind of stuff, hard drives, you know, all that kind of good stuff that you need in your home.
Oh, absolutely, of course. So explain your gaming environment. Obviously, you've got one of these devices. Well, I'm assuming you've got one of these devices. How do you do your tests? How do you do your R&D? Do you get some friends over on a Friday night and jump into it? Or like a big screen projector or a big screen telly? Or how do you watch it, Jeff?
Well, the Kinect, which we're releasing for holiday this year, is from what we're... How we're actually pitching this is that we're changing gaming forever, I guess you could say, is that we're removing the controller from the equation. So essentially what happens is you become the controller, and Kinect actually came out of Microsoft Research, and it has an RGB camera in it, a microphone that detects your voice, so if you want to pause TV or you want to pause something you're watching, you just say Xbox pause, and it pauses the TV and all that kind of stuff. So essentially, Kinect is it's actually a lot smaller than I'd originally thought it was going to be. But we actually had it an open house at Luna Park in Sydney, where customers could come in and they could actually play around with the Kinect prior to the release. And it's a smaller device than you would actually think. And
so you don't need a rack in your lounge room to use one.
No. The rack I've had for about 3 or 4 years, and we built a house a while back, and I got a stairwell, and I put a rack underneath that, and I got Cat5e cabling throughout the house.
Super.
And I kept the rack because it's a good way to, one, it's a good way to lock up all my computer equipment because it has a key on the front of the door, and I got tired of trying to make PCs quiet in the lounge room.
Well, that makes sense.
So I could be sitting there watching TV and I go, I can hear something. I can hear something. I know I can hear something.
Mm.
So I ended up moving all the stuff into a central room, and I run a 25-meter component cable to my Pioneer Plasma under the floor. And then I have my amplifier in the room, and all the speaker cables go under the floor. And all. I did all that. In this house we're in now, I did all the cabling myself because I watched the guy cable it, and I went, that's pretty simple. I can do that. So I got a mate around that was an electrician and could actually do splicing of cables. So I ran all the cables and he crimped them all for me. So it's pretty easy, really, when you've done it once or twice.
As long as all the network cabling was done with the supervision of a licensed installer.
Oh, Graham, everything is easy when you know how, isn't it? Yeah.
So and so the Xbox
we have to
is
say
in the
that.
Other the Xbox is in the other room, and the thing about Kinect is that you stand in front of the Kinect when you first run it, and it has to identify you. Okay, so it looks at you, and it detects your body, and it identifies you to the Kinect.
So you sort of like physically calibrate it, Jeff, by the sounds of it.
You are physically calibrated.
And can it recognize me? It'll know who I am?
Yes.
Wow.
So what will happen is that now games are specifically designed for Kinect, and we have some games, if you go up to the Xbox site up on xbox.com.au, you'll be able to find the games that we've got. And we see that this is going to be very popular with kids because if you look at kids, the way they look at... how many times does your kids touch screens all the time? They just go up to a PC computer and they want to touch it, right?
Yeah, you could say that.
And you tell them to not touch it. Now, what we're moving from is we're moving... This is a technology where we're... And I hate to be serious now, but we're moving from what we call a graphical user interface to what we call a natural user interface. This is what they call GUI to NUI. It's like an acronym from hell, that one. But so it's moving from how we interact with the PC, how we interact with electronics. And so natural user interface, so the Kinect is the first step towards that, where you can throw away the controllers, and you basically put your hand up to log in, and you wave at the Xbox, and it says, oh, hello, and all that, and you wave at it, and you log in, and then you just move your gesture, your hands back and forth, and I'm kind of waving my hand left and right, to move things back and forth on the screen. And then when you get in the game, like there was a game that I was testing out the other day called it's Whitewater Rafting, and you jump up to start the game.
I've seen this on YouTube. This looks really cool, actually.
Yeah, you jump up and the raft goes swooping down the thing and all this, and you move to the side and all that kind of thing to steer it, to move the guy from, you know, and your avatar is there. So your avatar that you have on Xbox Live is actually in the game now. It's different to what we offer in the sense that they have the controller still, but they're doing all the wireless stuff. What this is actually offering is no controller whatsoever, meaning that the whole family can join into the game. So more than what, if you've got, you know, a couple of kids, they can both play the whitewater rafting game, and they can both be in the boat down the...
Hand gesture stuff you were saying, that sounds very Minority Report. Is that the kind of thing you can move stuff around?
That's what we thought. That's what I thought when I first saw it. But it's interesting what's going on. It's the cameras are, and what'll happen is that the Kinect will actually look for the floor. So when you first set it up, when it calibrates itself, it has to find where the floor is. Then it finds it. So this camera moves up and down like a red eye kind of thing, looking around the floor. Looking at it's freaky stuff, but I mean it's interesting. Because we invest so much in research, this is what comes out of the research team, and it's amazing technology they're actually doing.
Fascinating technology.
Want to play with
one. Hey, is there any limits in family members? Like, do you have to? You can't have a family more than six or something like that, or it recognizes mum, dad, and all the kids and the friends and the neighbors when they come over. Do they have to log on once or register once?
Well, it's kind of using your Xbox Live ID. So you know how if you've got an Xbox at home, it uses your Xbox Live ID. It just logs on with that. I'm not sure on that one. I don't know how many it'll actually recognize. I've only got four in my family, so that's been fine with that. Basically, my son and I are the only ones that actually have tested it at this point. But he nearly fell off the bed the other night playing the River Run game. So I hold on to him. But, I mean, personally, I'd like to sit down when I play games, but I think kids are going to kind of love being able to get interactive. And then some of the games that we're going to have, like, Kinectimals, which is a kid's game where they can interact with, like, a tiger and all this kind of stuff. You've probably seen those videos as well. If you go up to xbox.com.au/Kinect, and they've got some videos up there about what's available. And the great thing is it'll work with all the existing Xboxes that are out there.
Well, that was going to be my question, Jeff. If you've already got an Xbox, is this a plug-in or is this a new console?
No, it's just a thing that sits on top of your TV, plugs into the USB port, plugs into power.
So you don't need an Xbox already, or you do need one?
No, you need an Xbox. You definitely need, if you've got an Xbox already.
So it's a plug-in. Yeah, it's an additional.
It's just it plugs into the USB port, it plugs into power, and then there'll be an update. You know, that'll come down via Xbox Live.
And are these Kinects available on the shelves now, Jeff? Or
it's
is
Chrissy,
it,
I think.
Is it you may have a special pre-release secret Microsoft one that you're trialing? But what's the release date if they're not already on the shelves?
Right now we're saying holiday 2010. That's the date at this point in time. So that's the date that they're looking at. The new Xbox, though, they also, as part of this, we came out with a new sleeker Xbox, which you might have seen. And the main thing for the new Xbox is that it's smaller and it's quieter. So they've done a lot of work to make it a lot quieter than it was before. And from what I've heard we've got a room on the level I'm on at work, that they've got eight of them in the room, and they turn them all on, they can't hear them. So they've done a lot of work to make them a lot quieter. So it's holiday 2010. That's what we're looking at this point in time.
We're talking to Jeff Alexander, IT Pro Evangelist from Microsoft, based in Sydney, and we're talking about the new Kinect, which is the evolution of Natal. Jeff,
K-I-N-E-C-T, if you're searching for it.
Yes.
Yes, that's correct. It's a tough one if you're depending upon your accent. So.
Yes, I struggle with those from time to time. I've quick question in relation to, I guess, gaming and the types of games that are out there. I think when I saw a Natal video when it first was being demonstrated, they were talking about game shows type sort of things where you clap your hand to answer the question, which I think is good for families, as well as the fact that, too, as a parent, the thing that works against video games is the fact that you've got kids sitting on seats twiddling their thumbs. And this flies in the face of that, and this is what I've been hanging out for as a parent, because the kids can actually jump and swing and stay fit and do all sorts of things like that. But game shows and things like that, or educational quizzes, is going to really, you can do your own Price is Right or Come on Downs or whatever it is like that. Is that still going to be the case for this box as well?
I think the initial lineup of games are things like Dance Central, which I'm a white guy, so I don't want to be doing Dance Central. That's not a good thing. Connectimals, Kinect Sports, Kinect Joyride. There's a Your Shape Fitness Evolved, which means your partner can do the Pilates and all that kind of stuff. Zumba Fitness, Kinect Adventures, and Sonic Freeriders. But I suspect those types of things will come further on down the track.
And you're going to have a shop as an online shop where, like in some of the other game consoles, you can say, "Oh, it's time for a new game. I'm going to log on and download one." Or is it?
Yeah,
same sort of thing.
We already have that. I don't know whether that's going to be available for Kinect. I mean, basically, the Xbox games, the Xbox 360 games, will be sold through retailers just like they are now. So, like, if you go down to a EB Games or somewhere like that, I had to get my son. He got a Nintendo DS voucher, so I took him down to the nearest EB Games, and I was asking the girl there how the Xbox 360s were selling, and she said, "Oh, out of sight with the new one." And they were hanging out for the for Kinect, and the games will be sold through those retailers initially. I believe.
So just look in the Xbox 360 section; will have a Kinect logo on it or something for the ones that support it, will it?
Yes, it does. It has a Kinect logo. That it's a game that's specifically designed for Kinect.
Just reading, some of our people in the chat are having a go at New Zealanders and the way you pronounce it, so maybe it'll be big in New Zealanders as well.
Funny enough, I was just over there last week, so I can relate to that.
Excellent. You left just in time for the earthquake.
Hello to everyone in Napier in New Zealand who's listening to the program.
Yeah, we go to air in New Zealand too, yes.
Well, I was a bit concerned because I left Auckland on, Wednesday night? And when did the earthquake hit? Thursday?
Well, Thursday or Friday, I think it was. Yeah, it wasn't too long ago. About 24 hours
ago. I think it was Thursday. So right. that was interesting.
So, Jeff, we're sort of running out of time now, so we've got to sort of wrap things up a little bit. It's been very interesting hearing a little bit about what we've got potentially coming for the Christmas stocking this year. I like the sounds of video games at the best of times, especially something where the kids are going to be running around. Now, we were talking earlier about the server technology.
Windows Home Server, yeah.
Is there trials available for that? Where do we go and the likes?
Yeah, you can go to Microsoft.com/home server, and you can download trial for home server. So if you have an old PC kicking around the house that you don't want, you're not using anymore, you can play around with it on that.
Don't say that to Dr. Ron. He likes really old PCs. I think
if you want to buy one, HP in Australia sell them. So they've finally released the HP Media Smart Server in Australia, Acer, and if you go to other retailers like AusPC Market and Inspire Digital, they sell them as well.
Excellent. All right. And obviously Christmas time for some new gaming sort of technology when that comes along as well. So, yeah, it should all be good.
Fun summer,
you can set up your home network. I do like the sounds of the backing up technology.
So do I. Yeah.
I think that's really good because traditionally in the home environment, that's the thing that's going to kill most of you is the fact that something dies, like the old laptop dies and you need to update. That's probably a good thing too when you do a hardware changeover. You can discard one and restore to another or something.
Well, my
like
home server at the moment is a Linux server running Samba, but of course I don't have all these add-on technologies like the bare metal backup, which, it's a good reason to move to the Microsoft system.
And even for the price, it's a bargain when you think about what you'd pay for a backup.
It sounds like it, yeah.
The easier we can make it, the more accessible we can make it, the more people will use it.
Absolutely.
And that was the goal, is to make it as easy as possible when people are thinking about backup. Just put it in a corner, set and forget.
Yeah.
That's the whole idea.
And especially with the digital photos too, like I've got, I'd say terabytes as a stab in the dark, but no, seriously, I've got photos going back for 4 or 5 years because my digital photos have been collected since back then. Kids when they were literally basically crawling around on the floor, and you don't want to lose those. You're backed up in the cloud and the likes, and to have something that's going to automatically do it for you, not to mention the offsite backup, which everyone should be doing, shouldn't they?
Of course.
It'd be good. Jeff, it's been fantastic. Thank you for sparing some time for us this evening. And who knows, we might get you back on when Natal, or should I say, Connect with my New Zealand accent comes out around Christmas time or something like that. It should be good. So, thank you very much. Your blog? Your blog?
blogs.technet.com/b/Jeffa36.
Yep, that's right.
We'll put a link in the show notes for you there, Jeff, so everyone can go and visit.
Yeah. And I think Dees wanted me to plug the fact that if you go to microsoft.com/Australia/technet, I believe, you can get a 90-day trial of Windows 7 Enterprise if you're a business.
Oh, okay. Excellent. All right. Well, until next time, thank you. Happy gaming. And thanks for sharing some of your knowledge with us this evening. It's been a very learning experience. Thank you, Jeff.
Thanks, Jeff.
No problems, guys. Suffering Succotash. This has to be the best technology show on the internet. Tech Talk Radio. Remember when Tech Talk Radio first hit the airwaves some 5-odd years ago? Listeners could ring up and say their bit. Remember that? Well, it's back.
The Tech Talk Radio feedback line has risen from the ashes. So if you have a comment, criticism, correction, or you just plain want to get it off your chest, then start dialing 03-8682-8836. The Tech Talk Radio feedback line is your direct line to being heard by millions of Tech Talk listeners around the planet. So get dialing 03-8682-8836. That's 03-8682-8836. Call now.
But we've run out of steak knives.
I'm not sure that they're driving competition out of the whole marketplace.
Well, no, they won't take a definitive stance on that either.
You don't win elections, you lose them.
Who's in the limelight for all the wrong reasons is the question.
Oh, but it's great. That's outside Australia.
Lots of girls on the floor there doing development.
Flash is available for free, and I can develop on it for free, can I?
No. Most modern name servers dealt with that without even blinking.
Entertaining. That's very hard to do when it's...
it really is hard to simulate it.
Informative.
It's a glorified phone, but it's...
Independent.
That's their own stupidity.
That's exactly right.
Yeah, I agree.
You're listening to Tech Talk Radio.
See, there's some things you just got to do on...
You're listening to Tech Talk Radio.
In this house, we obey the laws of thermodynamics!
Cool! This thing is amazing!
Tech Talk Radio's Gadget of the Week.
Out of my own!
Sennheiser is the name, the brand name in headphones. We all use Sennheiser headphones here.
They're very nice, aren't they?
They're used widely in the industry. This week's gadget is the Sennheiser Adidas PMX 680 sports headphones.
Shoes.
No, headphones.
Oh, Adidas, different spelling.
Oh, sorry, I'll push the right fader up. Was it Adidas, different
Adidas, different spelling.
PMX 680s. These great-sounding headphones come with a rugged neckband to keep your lightweight headphones securely in place. Their energizing sound will push you ahead. Their sturdy ergonomic neckband construction guarantees a secure and comfortable fit. Never has a workout companion been more rugged, reliable, and musical.
But how do they sound?
They sound all right. Yeah. Sennheiser, what's in the box? The actual headphones themselves, foam ear pads, extension cable with volume control.
See, cables and doing exercise just don't sort of go together, do they?
No, you need wireless, don't you?
I would have thought.
Well, they're available from the Apple Store for just $89.95. It's a tech gadget this week. Andrew, what the buy pair? We'll have to try them. Have to try them out, won't we?
Well, next time you go for a jog around the block, see if you trip over something or, I don't know.
Give them a go. Anyway, Sennheiser Adidas PMX 680 sports headphones.
Here it is, everybody, the world's greatest website.
Tech Talk Radio website of the week.
For those of you who've got 5 minutes to kill, like, you know, if you're on hold to a telco or something, you're trying to get something fixed on your phone bill. And if you like playing puzzles or arcade-style games, have a look at this website, games.vh1.com.
VH1, isn't it a television video hits channel?
Have a look, games.vh1.com.
It is.
The VH1 community hosts hundreds of online arcade and action games, including such favourites as Bejeweled Blitz, Bookworm Bubbles, Gutterball 3D, Spy Hunter, Sudoku, just to name a few. And the thing that really got my attention that I was very impressed with, there's even a retro Intellivision page if you're into retro gaming. You can click on the Intellivision cartridge of your choice and play your favourite Mattel game from the 30-year-old online catalogue.
Mattel game? What was it, Barbie or something?
No, in television. Did you ever have it in television?
No.
The games actually use online, actually use the original source code, and the games run in a Java environment in your web browser.
Oh, wow.
Very, 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 very cool. So that's our website, Andrew. Games.
Have you been there? Have you used
it? Oh, I have, and I have. Yes, and yes. Games.vh1.com.
There is a fine line between genius and madness.
Missed it by that much.
I know nothing. Nothing.
Don't ask! For God's sakes, don't ask!
Houston, we have a problem.
The Odd Spot on Tech Talk Radio.
Thank you, Andrew, for this contribution.
Mine.
Which, yes, you added to the database last week.
Oh, that one.
Yeah,
that school
one.
Girls.
The school girls, two teenage girls.
That's a good, yeah.
From a Stockholm school have been fined 2,000 kronas, which is about $300 Australian, each, after being nabbed for bugging their teacher's meeting room.
That's a brilliant thought, isn't it?
Their operation was exposed after one of the conspirators revealed on Facebook that they had planted a listening device in the school staff room.
I rest my case. Facebook undoes everything, doesn't it?
If you want to conceal something, you don't put it on Facebook, do you?
No.
The girls were after an inside scoop on upcoming exams and hoped to discover how their teachers viewed them. According to Swedish newspaper The Metro, the girls hatched the plan after finding the teacher's meeting room empty when they were returning a set of lost keys. They bought the listening device from a local tech store, returned to the school, waited for the janitor to leave, and planted the device. The girls executed the plan the night
they
prior.
They went and bought when I bugged the school staff room. I had to build the bug myself.
We built the bugs, didn't we?
Yeah.
Yes.
I remember doing that.
There were no Dick Smiths around in those days, were there?
No, we got our talking electronics catalogue and we bought all the components.
Yep,
we soldered everything together.
Onto the circuit board,
and then we had to break into the... Well, we probably should stop there, shouldn't we?
I don't know how you got in.
How? Yes, that might be worse. How come you had a key to the school staff room? Oh, well. However, a few hours after the successful installation, one of the conspirators could not keep quiet and exposed their escapade on face tubes. That's the old face tubes. Andrew.
Excellent. That is Tech Talk Radio for this week. We'll return next week, all things going according to plan, and we'll do it all again as we head very close towards our 300th show.
As we career uncontrollably towards the 300th.
Should we pull the pin at 300? Should we go out on a high, or should we keep going after 300?
Graham's trying to work out how to do it.
No, don't say that on the radio, because then I'll have to do it.
We're trying to work out how to do something special for the 300th.
Something
special.
All right. Many thanks to Jeff Alexander from Microsoft tonight, telling us all about... a couple of up-and-coming things and things are already here now. The Windows 3 Home Server, which I think is very good. Now I know a bit about it. I didn't know much about it because I've always played with the Server 2008 sort of stuff. But anyway, no, that sounds really good. Backups are plenty. We'll be back with the same time next week and we'll probably have a... Hopefully it won't be quite so much of a slow news week. And we'll be back with all the same stuff next week. So till then, bye for now.
You've been listening to Tech Talk Radio, brought to you each and every week by a group of dedicated professionals from within the media, broadcasting, IT and telecommunications industries. The team consists of executive producer Andrew McComb, producer Dr. Ron, panellists Justin Dunlop, Graham Callaghan and Mark Diggins. Expert opinion from Adam Turner and our US correspondent is Lydia Davis. Post-production facilities courtesy of Evolving Communications. Podcast production by Graham Callaghan. Tech Talk Radio is broadcast, recorded and streamed live to the world each and every Monday night at 8 p.m. from the studios of 3WBC. The crew wish to thank all the stations around Australia that take the show. Tech Talk Radio is available for syndication on your local station. For sponsorship and advertising, call 03 9818 2756 or visit our website techtalkradio.com.au for more information. This has been a production of Tech Talk Radio Vic and is subject to copyright and applicable laws and may not be rebroadcast without approval.